former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonantoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Competitive eating is the crucible through which greatness is born, and the evidence comes before us shortly on the corner of Surf and Stidwell at Coney Island. Welcome into the Lombardi Line, presented by BetMGM on the most hallowed holiday. Yes, of course, for independence, but also for downing dogs. Despite the wonderful George Shea impression, I know I did just there. Believe it or not, I am Stormy Bonantoni, live from Circa Resort and Casino. Our guy Michael Lombardi out at his office on the East Coast in Jersey. Michael, you're not too far from Coney Island. You didn't have any interest in making the trip down there?
No, up there. I'd rather just see what the worldwide leader could provide for us today, you know, and enjoy. We always have a bike parade through our neighborhood, and it's growing bigger and bigger and bigger. And today we had that, and it was fun to see all the bikes. That everybody dresses up their bikes in red, white, and blue. So happy 4th to you, Stormy. Happy 4th to everybody out there listening to our program. Appreciate it.
Yes, absolutely. It's going to be a fun day. We are a football show by nature, and we'll have plenty of NFL, but it only makes sense for us to also discuss the Super Bowl of competitive eating on the program today. We did already, well, I know we are waiting for Joey Chestnut to see if he can have yet another mustard belt victory today, maybe try to set his own record. Mickey Sudo in the women's competition did go ahead and cash for bettors earlier today. There was a little bit of drama at the counter, though, as they were competing, because I guess one of her plates somehow got lost in the count from the bun boys. That's what they're called. I didn't realize that until I was watching the broadcast today. But the guys that have the like counter flipper, those are the bun boys. And they lost track of a plate, evidently. So, well, it looked like her and Mayo Ibihara from Japan were neck and neck throughout the competition. She ended up having a pretty decent margin of victory, 39 and a half hot dogs to the second place finisher at 33 and a half. That six hot dogs, though, still the thinnest margin of victory she's ever had. Said that the humidity had a little bit of an impact, too. I told you weather comes into account in these things, Michael.
Yeah, well, it's hot back here on the East Coast, and it's humid. So, yeah, I didn't know that it affects your because it affects my appetite the other way. Like, I'm hungry all the time in the sun, so I didn't get that one. But, look, I trust your instincts on this, Stormy. I really do.
My name is Stormy, so when it comes to weather, don't doubt me. That's all I'm going to say.
I'm backing off.
That's
There's
embarrassing.
No question.
Pretend I never said that. But, yeah, it's 84 degrees out there, 74%. Humidity. She wanted to break her record of 48 and a half. Mickey Sudo did. She was going for 50. Obviously didn't get even close to that. The prop was 43 and a half, which went well under. And considering 90% of the tickets were on the under, a lot of people making money there. But her ninth consecutive title, you don't count the one that she missed because she was having a baby. So they still say nine consecutive for her. Meanwhile, Joey Chestnut, a minus 5,000 favorite on the men's side, which that competition should begin relatively soon. For anybody that's a new bettor, just remember, minus 5,000, that means you got to lay $5,000 just to win 100. That's how big of a favorite he is in this competition. He's won 15 of the last 16 events, is on a streak here. So what do you think about this? Maybe the humidity is going to play into a factor.
Right.
A lot of the money is on the under for his normal prop, but the will he set the record prop, beat his own mark of 76, 84% of the bets are on that alt over because it's at the plus 260 price. Would you rather, you know, have to lay a little bit more, like bet the minus 110, minus 115, whatever it is on Joey Chestnut to go under? Or would you rather just take a shot on the plus money price and see if he can get over the number?
I don't know if he needs to go over, right? So I don't know. Now, I know he said he wants to keep setting records, but we know that humidity is a factor. I think I play the under, and I think I would look at the people competing against him and go under there. You can get some decent odds on that, too, because he's got, what, like a 20-dog advantage in this race here? I mean, it's kind of hard for him not to win it. It's like Secretariat. Like, once Secretariat turned that corner 50 years ago, no one was catching him.
Yeah, last year, Joey Chestnut dealt with some different elements in addition to the heat and humidity. He was on crutches. He had a ligament issue in his foot. He also had the protester that came up in the middle of the whole thing. He had to put him in a chokehold while he was trying. So that cut down his number a little bit. It was the lowest in 7 years that he put up last year, which was still, just to give you some food for thought here. Oh, wow, food for thought. I need to chill with these. But even with that being his lowest total in forever, it was still 15 and a half more than the next closest guy in Jeffrey Esper. So that just goes to show what his dominance is. And Michael, because we were talking about this so much and the training that goes into it, I was doing some Googling this morning on some of the specific things that Joey Chestnut does to prepare for an event like this. He does mouth stretches every single day. You'll see as he gets onto the stage, the like just him growling essentially with how wide he can open his mouth. He does burping exercises and a full cleanse a day and a half before. He said he needs to be as empty as possible before he can do this tournament. It is really astounding what all goes into this. I'm shook.
I am. I mean, to me, it's way too much information for me. Like, seriously, I don't need to know this, all this about what Joey's up to. But look, I mean, for the 10 grand and the prize that he wins, I mean, I wonder if he does. Do you think he does like, you know, where he goes and does like exhibitions to for people, they pay him to come in and watch him eat hot dog? Like, that kind of doesn't seem right to me. Right. Like, I don't know. How does he enjoy food after this?
I don't. Yeah, that's the question. I wonder if he probably like doesn't have, I wonder if people like that have favorite foods and favorite stuff, because when you're a competitive eater and your life revolves around like being in eating season and not, like, it makes things unenjoyable. And this guy is crazy. He competes in 20 plus events a year, has 55 different world records for eating stuff. Listen to some of these, Michael. Not only hot dogs and buns. He is an eclectic talent here. Hard-boiled eggs, 141 in 8 minutes. Glazed donuts, 55 in 8 minutes. Pulled pork sandwiches, 45 in 10 minutes. Ice cream sandwiches. You got to have a totally different approach for ice cream sandwiches, I feel like. Because
yeah,
the brain
freeze
aspect.
Like, you get brain freeze on that, right? Don't you think?
Absolutely.
Now, is it ice cream sandwiches, is that like chocolate vanilla or is that just straight vanilla?
I would anticipate it's the straight, like it's the straight vanilla, like the chocolate sandwich vanilla ice cream, the classic.
Yeah.
And that's the way to go.
But I mean, how do you get through that many? You know, when I was in high school, we used to have like you would go get that for whatever it was during your lunch break. And the freezers were so hard, it took you like 10 minutes just to bite into the first. Like, how do you do that?
I don't know. Like, but, and I love, so I'm a weird eater too, mind you. I like dissect my food. If it's a sandwich, I'm eating like part of the cookie-ish part of it first. That's when I do Oreos, I always split them. I make like an Oreo house. Like, I take my time when I eat stuff. So it's mind-boggling to me how many people can just like down what they do in this spot.
It's like, well, that's, you know, we just don't mentally, we don't even not aware of what the hell's going on, right? So, and Joey Chestnut's made a living out of not being aware of what the heck he's putting. He's just throwing it down there. And what do they drink, Stormy? Does he drink just water? Is that what they put everything in water, right? They dump the hot dogs in the water, right?
Yeah, I think he does. I know some people have like, not lemonade, but it's like a pink liquid. There's some people that do like a fruit punch. It's a whole thing. That's where we go too far in the lack of enjoyment for this kind of a thing. I also just want to say, I'm very upset. I posted this on Twitter. I'm very upset at the crowd that's all over social media and in the media that says that they can't watch this thing because they're so grossed out. This is an American tradition. We were texting back and forth yesterday about how far this tradition goes back. And it was guys just trying to debate who's more patriotic in the early 1900s in Coney Island, which is so funny to me.
Yeah, it's really kind of remarkable. I mean, and we have been known for the big goal. I mean, look, we are a country that eats in excess, right? And so everything we eat is supersized. I mean, you've seen that documentary, supersized sodas. I mean, why wouldn't we hold an all-you-can-eat hot dog contest, right?
No question. I also need to let you know, Michael, because I know that you were on pins and needles about this, since we were talking about weather. We are in a weather delay in Coney Island right now because of a lightning strike in the area.
Wow. Yeah. We had a lot of lightning last night here in the Jersey Shore. So, you know, hopefully that's passed. And, you know, I mean, Joey's probably ready to go too. You know, he's probably ready to go get going on this.
See, this is another thing. How does this now impact the psyche of these professional eaters in the moment? Because they're used to their routine. They were prepared for a certain schedule. Now that's thrown off. I feel like the record's out the window now.
Yeah, I do too. I would, you know, I mean, look, I think the only thing you can bet in this is you got to find something where The under gives you plus money. I mean, in all fairness here, right? It makes no sense to do, you know, to bet anything where you're not going to get some kind of plus money. You know, I mean, like, no, I wouldn't break the record. No, at 380, you know, that to me, that's not good value there.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you got to just try to find some of those other competitors kind of in the race to see what they do. But at least we'll be able to cover it here, Stormy, and we'll kind of have some form of conclusion. Because how long does it take? How much time do they get?
10 minutes.
10 minutes. Wow.
Yeah. So I will keep everybody abreast of the situation when the hot dog eating contest resumes. We will get everybody up to date on that information when they begin. I'm really excited for it. I hate that it's delayed. I also think it's great how Joey Chestnut has cashed in on the way that people look up to him in the space, that he's got so many endorsement deals, paid appearances, Hooters, Hostess, Raising Cane's, Pepsi. He owns his own hot sauce line. Like, we joke about it, but his net worth is over $4 million, and he made $500,000 last year just competitive eating. So, yeah, it's crazy. We do need to take a break here, Michael, as we get things started. A fun open to the show on this 4th of July holiday. When we return, though, we will continue to celebrate freedom by looking at some of the free agents around the NFL and NBA. See, that's so smooth. Steph is an idea woman. I don't know if you know. Behind the glass, she's got this rundown covered in different fun ways for us to have plays on the 4th of July. We'll be right back on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Time to download Nevada's premier sports betting app, BetMGM Sports. BetMGM has all your favorite wagering options, along with in-game betting, boosted odds specials, and more. You can download the BetMGM app today and stop by any MGM casino on the Strip with your state-issued ID to open up an account and start placing sports bets from anywhere in Nevada. Whatever your sport, whatever your betting style, you're going to love BetMGM's state-of-the-art technology and fan-friendly specials every day of the week. Visit BetMGM for terms and conditions. Must be 21 or older and physically located in Nevada. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-522-4700. We didn't anticipate being able to open the show today talking all things hot dog eating contest because the competition was supposed to begin as we got on the air today. But a reminder for anybody that is waiting to watch the event, it is currently in a lightning delay out there in Coney Island, but we push forward nonetheless. Michael, we have lots of NFL that we can discuss today, some NBA in the mix as well. In about a half an hour, our guy Will Hill will join the program, get some of his picks, especially in MLB, big day for baseball today. And later on in hour two as well, get a little college football in the mix today with Aaron Moore, recent contributor and college football handicapper. Excited for that, too. You start paying attention to college football more like as we get close to the season, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I try to use August as kind of like a month to get caught up on it and see where, you know, because of all these portals, you know, the portals closed and, you know, and as they come back and kind of figure out who's got a chance and go through the quarterbacks and, yeah, and try to study it by conference. You know, I'm a big believer in college football in limiting the amount of conferences you bet on. Mm-hmm. I mean, I love the entire landscape of college football from the, you know, the smaller schools to the Southeast Conference, but you can't make money on picking a game in the Pac-12 and then coming into the Southeast and going to the Big Ten or going to the, you know, the Atlanta, you know, going to the All-American. You've got to really specialize in two conferences because that'll give you like 24 teams, let's say. Well, you know, let's face it, the NFL only has 32 teams, and it's hard to pick that game. So the more teams you add to your betting pool, the harder it's going to be to make any money. You're going to be too inconsistent. So for me, it's about really focusing on the teams and the conferences in those and pick basically get to 24 and study those 24.
That's a great point. Narrow it down and become an expert. And I'm excited to talk through some of that with Aaron Moore later because I know he's somebody who specializes in some of those mid-major, lower-level conferences that don't have as many eyeballs on them as well. Makes those his conferences so that he can hone in and find a little bit of an edge over sportsbooks there as well.
There like you take the MAC. I mean, you know, they're up. Their bets are you could study the MAC really well. They're kind of off. I don't know if the book has as much info on the MAC as you have, so that you're kind of even there. So you have information the book does, whereas the Southeast Conference, the book might know more than you do just because they have more contact. So I think those smaller conferences are really, you know, one year when Patrick and I, when we first started doing the Lombardi line, we were betting, you know, it was Rutgers, bet against Rutgers, and bet against Akron. And every week the line could never get adjusted and people were making money.
For sure. Michael, also, I couldn't help but notice that we both are patriotic in our red today.
Oh, I had to wear red today, yeah.
We don't. Usually it's me and Pritch that match when I'm on the show with him, but nice to have us matching for a change here.
I mean, it's warm. I mean, when I left the barbecue this morning, the brunch this morning, it was everybody's over in the backyard. They looked at me like I was crazy. Are you going to go to, you know, you're going to die? And I said, well, first of all, my office is freezing, so I'm not going to die in there. And I got to wear something red today. You know, there's no way I'm coming in without red.
I get grief about that all the time, Michael, because I live in Las Vegas and it's triple digits outside. But you will always catch me wearing long sleeves or bringing a sweater wherever I go because they keep the AC pumping so freaking cold. And half the time when you and Femi record the podcast and Femi's in here in the studio, he cranks it all the way down to 64. And I just got to readjust to the room.
I'm dying with you. He still sweats.
So good. Well, as we continue to celebrate this 4th of July holiday on a Tuesday edition of the Lombardi Line, let's celebrate our freedom looking at some free agents out there. And we will continue until some of these players get picked up by a team, figure out their contract situation, to talk about DeAndre Hopkins and Dalvin Cook, because it's just the way of the world this time of year. So what's the latest that you've been hearing specifically on the DeAndre Hopkins side of things since his visits with the Patriots and Titans?
Well, I think what can you deduce has occurred, right? He took two visits, the Titans and the Patriots. And we know this. He didn't get a deal he wanted. Because if he would have gotten that deal, he would be signed by now. It isn't like he's mulling an offer and he's thinking about it. Or he's, you know, going back. He's trying to see where he can generate the value. And that's only going to take time. And the longer this goes, he believes, rightly or wrongly, that something will occur to where Tennessee says, okay, we're going to add more money to the pot. I think the biggest thing, Stormy, when you have a limited free agent pool like's available currently, is you basically say, who am I competing against, right? Who am I competing against to get your services? And if I'm competing against three or four teams, I'm going to have to add more money into the till. If I'm not competing against all these teams, why would I change my offer? I'm competing against myself. I think that's what's going on. I don't get the sense that, you know, everybody had Devontae Parker as the cap casualty for the Patriots to sign Hopkins, and then we find out they extended Parker. Mm-hmm. So I think this market isn't as robust as he hoped it would be. I like the Titans at plus 500 to be the team that he goes to because I do think they need him, and I do think they're not tanking completely. And if he'll take a one-year deal – a little bit like what Bruce Brown did when he went to the Pacers. It's essentially a one-year deal at like $22 million, right? And so Indianapolis gets a chance to get him off their books if it doesn't work out. It's the same thing in football, right? You take him on a one-year deal, you pay a little more, but then you get off of it. Whereas Beckham's contract, it was a one-year deal, but they're going to carry a lot of debt with them moving forward.
And with Hopkins, we do know, of course, the relationship, albeit a little bit different with Mike Vrabel as him being a defensive coach, but they know each other. They have a past. 5-1 seems like a good number there. The Patriots are still the odds on favorite at minus 120. But as for that Titans wide receiver room, to your point about them needing somebody like him, they had last year 1,595 yards, 30th in the NFL, 57% reception percentage, 30th in the NFL, 6 total receiving touchdowns, 31st in the NFL. So, yes, they certainly could use another guy in that room that's productive. Hopkins alone, missing 8 total games last year, had 717 yards and 3 touchdowns. Let's go to Dalvin Cook. He's long been connected with the Miami Dolphins. Of course, the Patriots, though, Another name that's been thrown out there is a team that's intrigued by his potential skill set, joining up with Ramondre Stevenson. The Jets have also apparently been doing their homework with Breece Hall coming back from injury. Where do you think makes the most sense for Dalvin Cook?
Well, I think, again, it's going to come down to money. Will the Dolphins pay that $9 million a year that he thinks he's going to get? I don't see how they can or why they would. You know, they're 31st in the league in rushing attempts last year. I don't think they're going to make a commitment. I think he fits really well for New England, plus 200. You know, that's a pretty good play. The Commanders at 20-1 should be involved in this, but it doesn't seem like they are. Now, maybe in July the 20th, when Josh Harris gets approved as the new owner of the team in the league meeting, maybe they'll decide, okay, here's where we're going to go. Because right now that franchise has been handcuffed in terms of spending money. Even when you look at Deron Payne's contract, they had to push everything into September in terms of payment so that the new owner would assume the debt, not Daniel Snyder. So I think they are. I think the Jets want to get involved. I think the Jets are all in on everybody, especially a skill player. Yeah. It wouldn't pass me by, but Jeff Darlington of ESPN is pretty wired down there in Miami. He thinks he's going to go to Miami, and if he takes a less deal, I'm sure he's going to take Miami over New England or over the Jets because that's home.
Yeah, South Florida guy, if you're going to take less money, do it where you're comfortable. As for the Dallas Cowboys, Tony Pollard is taking over as their every down back. Who do you think would be a more likely pickup for Dallas, bringing back Zeke or Kareem Hunt as a secondary option?
I would like Kareem Hunt more there. Now, you know, Zeke's a good short yardage, but I think Kareem Hunt runs with power and he runs angry. You know, and I think he could really be a nice addition because he would complement Pollard really well in the passing game. He's really good out of the backfield, Kareem Hunt, and he runs with power and he would give them – they need that power back. They need that 1-2 punch. That's why I like Cook so much for New England because Cook gives – would go along with Stevenson. Stevenson's really a good player. Stevenson's a red chip player, a top 10 running back, could be a top 5 running back in the league, you know, and if he protected the football more, fumbling, I mean. So I like Stevenson and Cook as a 1-2 threat. I also like, you know, if Cook went to Dallas, that would be ideal for them. I mean, I don't know if they'll spend the money. Zeke, I worry about because he seems to me to be a tackle-to-tackle runner. And when you have a running back that you know isn't going to get the ball outside, they're a lot easier to defend.
Yeah, and with Zeke, like, I'm curious to see what ends up playing out with him because we know, like, he's a proven red zone touchdown threat, certainly.
He runs hard.
12 last year, third among all players. So there will be a team that will benefit from his skill set in those situations. Just a matter of where.
No question.
We're going to step aside real quickly. When we come back, continue some NFL news and notes around the league. A lot of people talking about Tua Tagovailoa this week, but for various reasons. We will discuss that and more in a moment.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
It's always football season here at VSiN, which is why we've just released our NFL betting guide. The NFL guide is going to help you get set for all things this upcoming NFL season with in-depth profiles of every team, including advanced stats, proven betting systems, and proprietary betting trends, plus best bets on season win totals, futures, and props. Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today for as low as $19 and get our newly released NFL betting guide. You can also take advantage of the summer kickoff special where you get access to everything we do here at VSiN from now through the Super Bowl in February for just $175. That is the deal you want. Sign up today at VSiN.com/subscribe. Our guy, Michael Lombardi, a big contributor in this year's NFL guide. You'll get his insight from some former professional NFL players, some great handicappers, all such good information. And let's dive into some NFL news and notes right now, see how we can tie that back to some of the betting information we have in that guide. Michael Vick said in a recent appearance on Tyreek Hill's podcast, It Needed to Be Said. He had a few things that needed to be said on Hill's quarterback Tua Tagovailoa. Said, I just think he's got to bulk up a little bit, get a little bigger, get stronger. As you grow into your man body, that's what needs to happen. Ain't nothing wrong with picking up another 10, 15 pounds. Don't get hit. Don't get knocked around. Of course, referencing the concussion issues that we saw last year in the NFL. But clearly, Mr. Vick hasn't seen some clips of Tua at OTAs because I thought that he did look pretty bulked up from where we saw him a year ago.
It's going to be interesting to see. I did too, Stormy. It's going to be interesting to see if that added weight has affected his quickness
and
his escapability. Because, look, the difference between Kyler Murray and Tua is they're both undersized. Tua's got really good instincts in the pocket, but he doesn't have great escapability. I mean, you want Tua to kind of move and try to force him to his right because you can defensive linemen can catch him. Whereas, you know, Murray, it's hard to force him any which direction because he's so damn fast. So it's going to be interesting. I don't know if there's any correlation between weight gain and keeping you from getting concussions.
Yeah.
I think what would help more than weight gain, frankly, is if they ran the ball more, if they kind of paced the game and didn't make it a play action, didn't make it a drop back pass or an RPO game where he's got to read it out. I think that would help him more than anything.
I agree. And we know, like, Mike McDaniel can put something together like that, certainly. But I think from a Tua standpoint, he's probably in control your controllables mode, right? Like, what can I do to try to make this situation better for myself? So if that's adding weight and becoming stronger and more durable, can that help me? If it is using that new Matrix helmet that's supposed to help limit concussions in the NFL that they're trying to institute with quarterbacks here, if it is doing jiu-jitsu and learning how to fall properly, he's just probably in the mode of trying to do whatever he can to stay fit and stay available for the team. And we know when he's on the field, he was so productive last year and really took a significant step, proved a lot of doubters wrong. And his wide receiver, we know Tyreek Hill, who of course hosts that podcast, he called two of the most accurate quarterback in the NFL. Jaylen Waddle recently was asked in another interview as well, what makes Tua so special for him? And he said ball placement, said he thinks everybody sees it, knowing exactly where to place the ball so his receivers can not only catch it, but catch and run with it. That's what makes Tua, Tua. And hopefully they can just get more of the same from that standpoint if he's available this year.
Yeah, I mean, look, and he was what he did was his first 2 years in the league, they couldn't make any plays down the field. Last year, you know, he threw almost 400 passes in 13 games. And so, you know, and he averaged almost 9 yards per attempt. That's significant. And he does a good job protecting the football. But the reality here is can he stay away from those big hits?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if he can. And I don't know if that's going to really, by gaining more weight, going to help him. You know, they want to throw the ball. They've got Tyreek Hill, who's incredible. They also have Waddle. You know, that they're a good offensive team with explosiveness. It's hard to get away from that. But let's face it, you know, he's got to be able to stay on the field if they're going to win. You know, it was interesting. Randy Mueller the other day was really, like, he was pumping up Mike White. You know, feeling like Mike White could come in there and play really well and think that he's undervalued at what he is. You know, Randy certainly has seen a lot of good quarterbacks. He's entitled to that. And they went after Mike White in Miami fairly quickly. They didn't hesitate.
Yeah, I certainly don't have the eye that Randy Mueller has. But for me, Tua's health is a big factor in the way that I want to bet this team. And so I did not elect to bet an over on their season win total at 9.5. I don't have interest in betting on them to win the division. Things like that where people are trying to find plus money prices or unique ways to back this team if Tua is healthy. I would just prefer to play it safe and stay away from the Dolphins altogether kind of this year. So.
But think about this, though, Stormy. In just 13 games, okay, in just 13 games, he got sacked 21 times. That's all he did. He got sacked 21 times in those 13 games. And, you know, so it isn't like, oh, my gosh, you know, he's got sacked so many times, they're going to kill him, yada, yada, yada. And we know that he's not going to really, you know, he ran the ball 23 times. So his ability to take contact on plays that he initiates, 21 sacks, 23 rushes, that's 44 times he got tackled. And that's not a lot when you think about it for a quarterback. I mean, look, we know Justin Fields has been sacked 91 times, and that doesn't count all the rushing attempts he's had.
For sure. So it's that something that we're going to have to pay attention to early on in the season, see how things play out, and see if maybe Mike McDaniels is able to tweak a little bit of that offense. But to your point, they have such talented, skilled receivers. You want to get them the ball, so it's tough to go away from something like that. Chargers they obviously brought in a new offensive coordinator this year in Kellen Moore to improve that unit that already finished in the top half of the league in points and yards a year ago. But one of the ways that Moore wants to help LA take that step is by trusting in his quarterback to take more shots downfield. He joined Peter Schrager's podcast saying because Herbert is such an intelligent decision maker and they have such good skill players around him as well, that he feels he can call games more aggressively. Do you think that that'll be a recipe for success for this Chargers team and a team that's trying to not only get into the playoffs but win this year when they get there?
Well, I think part the problem last year why his yards per attempt went down, you know, he started out at 7.3, then he went up to 7.5, nice progression, trying to get it. And then last year he was at 6.8 yards per attempt. Why? Well, two factors, right? The offensive line struggled. They lost Slater. They lost a bunch of guys. He couldn't hold the ball. And then Mike Williams didn't play the whole season. So, you know, when you lose your vertical threat, no one's going to the stadium worried about Keenan Allen beating him over the top. They're worried about Keenan Allen converting third downs, but they're not worried about Keenan Allen stretching the field, making those loose plays, making those explosive plays. And so I think that's more of the concern they have in Los Angeles. And they've got to keep, I mean, they got to keep Mike Williams healthy. I mean, that's going to be the key for him. He's got to stay healthy. He's their explosive guy. He's the guy that everybody's worried about when you go play the Chargers, because if he's going, he's a great 50-50 jump ball guy. Now, you know, they drafted Quentin Johnston to give them another big receiver to play in that jump ball role. And if they can stay healthy in that area, that really helped them. But last year with Guyton and Palmer and, you know, the other receivers, once Williams wasn't in the lineup, they were not explosive, nor were you worried about him making explosive plays. As great of an arm that Herbert has and his ability to be accurate down the field.
Yeah. Justin Herbert's certainly a talent, and when you look at the quarterback play in the top of that division with him and Patrick Mahomes, you hope that that's going to be a fun rivalry that lasts for a really, really long time. How big do you think the gap is in the AFC West between them and the Chiefs? Because you look at their recent history, the last handful of years with those two quarterbacks at the helm, and despite Kansas City having a significant edge in wins, they've all been like field goal type games.
Oh,
the Chargers
yeah,
have been
games.
In all of them. They've been exciting.
Yeah, I mean, look, the Raiders had a chance to win a game in Kansas City last year, too. I mean, they're always good games, and, you know, if you have the ball last like the Raiders did, you've got to cash in. The Chargers have been their nemesis. Remember, they went back in there and beat them, and, you know, they had the ball last and won the game. Mike Williams makes that great play in the end zone for the touchdown. Look, I don't think there's a huge gap. I think it's going to come down to making the right play at the right time, and they need Mike Williams to play. I mean, Keenan Allen played 10 games last year. That's all he played, right? Mike Williams stressed for 13. Remember, we were complaining about he played Mike Williams in game set weeks 18 of the season and got him hurt. He wasn't available for him in the playoff game. We tend to forget this. Staley doesn't do smart things all the time. And that was not a smart thing. He's dominating the game against Denver and he still had him in there. And so he lost that one. I mean, that's where I think they struggled. And I think ultimately when you have Mike Williams and you have a chance to make plays down the field, he only had 4 touchdowns last year, Stormy. He's a better player than that when you get him the ball up the field.
Yeah, you got to have the availability and the health. Justin Herbert, by the way, a plus money price to lead the AFC West in passing yards this year. Patrick Mahomes coming off an MVP season and odds on favorite. But in terms of just passing yards and volume, very reasonable, I think, for Justin Herbert to be up there and potentially lead that category. Also, because we were talking about those close games with the Chargers, reminded me of the match the other day when Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce teamed up to win that competition against Stephen Clay. He said, "Chuck, you know I'm going to give you good TV. When's the last time you saw me win a blowout? All of my games are close." So he thought it would be the same thing on the golf course. Ended up being a dynamic win for them there, for sure. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, what would a 4th of July be without some fireworks from our guy Will Hill? Don't go anywhere.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Attention, BetMGM customers. Have a friend who loves sports as much as you do? Well, here's a chance for both of you to earn a $50 bonus when they sign up through BetMGM's Refer a Friend program. All you got to do, sign into your BetMGM account and click on the Refer a Friend program. Send your friend a message inviting them to register a new account in the same state that you use BetMGM in. Once your friend signs up, makes a deposit, you'll both get that $50 bonus. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. Must be 21 years of age or older to wager. All promotions are subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets. Bonus bets expire in 30 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Promotional offer not available in Mississippi and Nevada. Rolling along here on the Lombardi Line alongside former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. I'm Stormy Bonantoni. We welcome to the program now great friend of the show, VSiN contributor Will Hill at Not The Will Hill on Twitter. And given that we are in a lightning delay for the hot dog eating contest, yeah, I have to ask, Will, do you have any action going today?
Believe it or not, in a major upset, I have no action. I bet under last year, right as we were doing the show, because he was hurt. Remember, he was dealing with some sort of, I forget what the injury was, but he was on crutches. And I was like, can't eat that many hot dogs on crutches. And then I remember somebody ran onto the stage to interfere with him, and that slowed him down a little bit. But nothing for me in this one. I know they had the women's one earlier, and I think the girl who always wins it in the women's contest went under. So usually I think the unders are probably the way to go just because people want to bet overs, but no action for me.
Yeah, it's kind of hard the way the prices are set. I mean, there's really there's nobody even close to Chestnut. Like, nobody's even competing. That's why I think, to me, why would he exert all that effort if he doesn't have to?
And I think there was one of the years where there's some controversy about the count. Like, people, somebody went back and watched, and they said the judges just missed like a whole tray of like 5 or 10 hot dogs. So, I mean, that's one of those things where you bet it. I mean, you got to do it for entertainment, unless you really think you have an edge or something. It's there's better things to lose money on.
Yeah, well, and that's actually what happened, funny enough, Will, with Miki Sudo, the women's champion, in the early morning competition, because there was a plate that was missing. She ended up getting, I think, 5 more tacked on to her final tally at the end. So whereas we thought, based on the scoreboards, it was a really, really close competition, like 1 or 2 hot dog separation, it was actually a bigger margin. They just didn't have track of it properly. So
That is controversial. How long after did it take for them to adjust
it? It was pretty quick. It was only about a minute after, because fortunately they do 5 hot dogs a plate and they just count the plates up. And so easy math there. I know way too much about this. We need to move on. Well, today is also, in addition to it being the day for the hot dog eating competition, it's also a big day for baseball every single year. And I know while you didn't have action in the hot dog eating contest, you do have action in MLB. What's your bet of the day?
Yeah, we talked Thursday, and I bet against Adam Wainwright. I took the Astros, and I was like, I can't believe he's still in the rotation. I know he's a legend in that franchise, but he's pitching again today. And on Thursday, he gave up 6 runs. He did not make it out of the second inning. His numbers are awful. 2 base runners in an inning. He's just gotten hammered. So I will go Marlins team total over 4.5 runs. They should be able to get to Wainwright early and often. This is a good Marlins team. I don't know if they can hang on for a playoff spot here, but Wainwright has seen better days. I don't know. I know they don't want to embarrass him and put him in the bullpen or designate him for assignment. But as you always say, Lombardi, remember when is the lowest form of conversation. And it looks like Wainwright hung on a year too long here. So go Marlins team total over.
Yeah. Then is then, now is now. And I think we lose sight of that, especially when it comes to players. It's just human nature. They lose their way or they just don't play as well. Maybe it's injury related. I don't know. But I want to ask you a broader question on Major League Baseball. Will, you follow this really closely. What's the biggest surprise outside of the Reds this year for you?
Can I make it be a negative? I think the Padres, for all of their talent, to be, 8-9 games under 500, I think that's a surprise. I know you could phrase it as a disappointment, but if you're looking for a positive surprise, I would say the Marlins, they've played well here. I know everyone likes their pitching, but the fact that I think the new rules have sort of helped them here with the Arias, who can spray the ball over the field. So the Marlins for the good end in terms of a surprise, but man, the Padres, they're one of the more disappointing teams I've seen, really, just in terms of talent in any sport. I know, what was the Eagles who put all that talent together like 10 or 12 years ago and they called themselves the dream team? They sort of underachieved. But man, you just look at the names on the roster, the back of the baseball cards. This Padre team, I mean, baseball is an individual sport. You go up there by yourself and, nobody can help you hit or help you pitch. This is a team that should be much better than it is. So I'll go with the Padres.
VSiN contributor and handicapper Will Hill joining us on the Lombardi Line here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. And Will, we've done a lot of NFL futures with you over the last couple of weeks, but it looks like you've started to delve into a little bit of the college football totals and futures looking ahead to the 2023 season. Specifically in the Pac-12, Is there a team or a win total or something like that that really stood out to you? You know, I love those West Coast conferences.
Yeah, Pac-12 is a little better this year. I think, you know, it hasn't gotten a bad rap in recent years. I mean, it's been deserved. Every time they get a chance to go to the Final Four, they sort of fall on their faces. But it's a deeper conference. It's a good conference this year. Lombardi, I think you made a good point. It's hard to just tackle all these teams, all these players, all these conferences. If you really want to bet seriously, now, we can't do it as us. You know, we need to provide content and talk about all these teams. But if you want to be just a serious bettor, maybe pick one or two conferences. I think that's a great point. But as far as Oregon, I like over 9.5. I just think they are loaded on offense. The schedule is pretty easy early. They do have a road game at Texas Tech week 2, which is a tricky game. But other than that, it's pretty easy going. A bunch of cupcakes. They should, you know, get some confidence going early and pad some wins. And then later in the season, they're tough games. Oregon State, who's better? USC. Those games are in Oregon. So you got a two-headed monster here in running back with Irving and Whittington. You got a receiver there that's probably going to be in the first round, maybe in the first 15 picks. Bo Nix, who's my age, who's somehow still in college, he's back. So you know you at least have some experience with Nix. And he played pretty well last year after that Georgia disaster. So to me, there are some questions on the defensive side of the ball. But that's Lanning's side of the ball, who, of course, came over from Georgia. So they do lose Gonzalez to the pros, to the Patriots. They lose Sewell to the Bears, who a lot of people think will be a good player. But to me, there's enough talent. The schedule's light enough early where this is a 10-win team. This has been a 10-win team pretty much every year. You know, you take out the COVID year because nobody played any games, but they recruit every year. They win 10 games every year. This has become a really good, consistent program.
You know, I think the Pac-12 is going to be better. I mean, when you go through it, you know, Kalen DeBoer is a really good coach at Washington, and he's got Michael Penix there who, you know, it was interesting. You didn't think coaching matters. When he had him in Indiana, he was great. When he left Indiana, he wasn't good. Now he's at Washington, and he's back to being great again. So I think the quarterbacking in the Pac-12 is a little better. I mean, DeLoren from Arizona, for example, that kid was the freshman of the year at Washington State, transferred to Arizona. If Arizona gets any defense at all this year, they will win 7 games. I mean, they got a good team. They move the football effectively against everybody. They just haven't been able to stop anyone, and they blown some games. I mean, they beat UCLA and UCLA last year. So I think the Pac-12 is going to be better than people think, Will.
Yeah, I think you make a good point. It is going to be better. It's going to be deeper. It's going to be better. USC is loaded, as we know. Oregon's really good. Oregon State, that guy's a good coach, Jonathan Smith. That program was nowhere, and he took them to respectability. Utah is always really good. They've turned into a semi-perennial monster. And people thought Chip Kelly, you know, a few years ago, maybe the game passed him by. He can't coach anymore. They've quietly put together some nice seasons together. So, yeah, it's a good conference. It's a deep conference. Back to Arizona, you're right. I think their goal is to just somehow get to 7 wins and make a bowl. I think Fish has come out and said, hey, if we can get to a bowl game here, if we can start to get some people back in the stands, which is not always easy at Arizona, that's our goal for the season.
Well, and that's a team that 2 years ago in his first season, Jed Fish's, they were a 1-11 team, had some rough showings, but it was the first win in a really, really long time for the program. They improved to 5-7 last year, had that massive upset over then number 12 UCLA at the time. So it makes sense for them to, their win total set at 5.5. Michael thinks they can win 7. It's a +130 to the over if they can manage that schedule for Arizona. And Michael, also to your point about Washington and Kalen DeBoer, that was another big turnaround for the program because they went from 4-8 to 11-2 and a bowl win over Texas a year ago. I'm excited for this conference. I feel like everybody's talking about year two with Lincoln Riley and USC and Caleb Williams and how he's going to be this top overall pick and they're going to go ahead and overtake Utah to win the conference this year. But it feels like there's a lot of really, really good teams. And you said it off the top of talking about this conference, Will, that Pac-12 is going to Pac-12. They always seem to beat each other up at the end of the season and ruin their opportunities for a playoff appearance.
Yeah, you know, I think the biggest, the hardest thing for the Pac-12 is their games. Half the country doesn't see it. If they would play games at 4:00 West Coast time and earlier and have a broader sense of the country, I think people would really gravitate. Unfortunately, they play 10:30 East Coast time and not everyone who watches. That's why their ratings are so bad.
Yeah, Utah is usually a team that's a better's best friend. They always go over. They're always well coached. They're always consistent. They come into the year a little banged up, and I think there's just a little different of a psychology now as Utah becomes sort of the hunted instead of the hunter. I don't know that Utah is going to win a year again.
Yeah, we'll see. Cam Rising is coming back, but at what level of health as he gets injured again late in the season? Back-to-back years that the Rose Bowl goes sideways for him with an
tough
injury.
Tough schedule, too.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. Thanks so much, Will. You're awesome. Great
thanks,
stuff,
Will.
As always.
Happy 4th to you, buddy.
All right. See you. Happy 4th. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I love the Pac-12. I think it's going to be really fun. You mentioned, Michael, the quarterback play, the high level of competition that's growing. There are a lot of teams that could potentially make a run for a Pac-12 championship this year. Give a little competition to the Trojans at the top. We're going to take a quick break here, resetting with hour two of the Lombardi Line when we come back. What's on Michael's mind here on a 4th of July Tuesday?